Housing ministers from all provinces and territories, along with their federal counterparts, are gathering for a summit at White Point Beach Resort today and tomorrow to talk about affordable housing, homelessness, as well as other issues. Canada's big city mayors have called homelessness a national disaster. Here in Halifax, people sleeping on the streets, in the parks, and in shelters are hoping for the summit that will bring long-term solutions. There are many cliches about poor and homeless people. Some accuse them of being lazy and incompetent, wondering why anyone would lack a place to live in such a wealthy society. Researchers and the homeless cite many reasons for the growing problem: a low minimum wage, gentrification, a lack of affordable housing, drug problems or alcoholism, and dismally low social assistance rates. Here now is the story of two homeless people who have been living in Halifax for the last several months. And Chris Arsenault taped this story and brings us this report.
Just started off by saying that Ari and I are from Ontario, and we came to Halifax to open up a business and just start a new life. And we came here and we found a nice apartment and we moved in there. Things were going really good for us. We had good jobs. We opened our business, and one evening we came home and found our locks had been changed by our landlord. For whatever reasons he deemed suitable, he changed the locks. We really didn't know what to do. We were kind of standing there in shock. It was at 7:30 at night. We phoned the local police to try and help us get back into our house, and they have no recourse whatsoever as far as landlord and tenancy issues go. So they were polite enough to allow us to pick out a few belongings in our allotted 5 minutes. And we were basically put out on the street to figure it out for ourselves.
Now that brings us to what we referred to as Hotel Lumina. We were living in a 1991 Lumina for about 40 some odd days. We went to the RT the following day. We made an application for a hearing, and we thought at that point that because of the police presence and the way of the lockout, it was very clear in the act that says that neither the tenant nor the landlord shall alter the locking mechanisms on an entry door. And he clearly broke that rule, and we actually have a piece of paper that looks kind of like this, and it says, "I've changed the locks, call the police." And that was on the door, and the police witnessed this. So we were just so appalled and humiliated by the fact that there's rules that say you can't do this, yet he does it, and the police are just like, it's not our job.
I guess our next step, we turn to social services for some kind of aid in helping us find other housing while we were waiting for the tribunal to begin, which was approximately three to four weeks from the time of eviction to our first hearing date. We were denied social services I had a job in a supermarket, and having been thrown out of the house or locked out of our house, it's very difficult to get up in the morning and shower and get dressed and perform at your job. You know, every day we were just basically running around trying to find out, you know, where can we go and eat today? Where can we have a shower? Being from out of province, there are no shelters that provide shelter for couples. Talking about looking for showers, even doing your laundry. So we were denied social services because of a quit fire policy that they have, which I fell under because I had quit my job. We struggled and fought with them for almost 3 months. We were denied. We went through appeals, two appeals we've been through. Finally, in the last 2 weeks, we were accepted to social services based on the same information that we provided on day one of our application. So again, we have We're just waiting to hear back on an appeal that we started to appeal first denial.
So that's our battling point in the appeal process of the first denial. We're saying, well, if we got approved on that information that I just handed you, that's the information that you denied me back in May. In June. So therefore, you owe me 3 months of welfare. And then when you pay me that, I'm going to have too much money, so you're going to cut me off of welfare. But in actuality, it's not money that I should have in one lump sum now. This is money that I was supposed to be letting trickle through with, like, if anyone knows, they give you $535 for a couple. That's not enough to live anywhere. Like, that's, and then now because they're going to give it to us in three checks, one lump sum, they're going to cut us off welfare. So there's another arguing point there, which I might have them attach to the small claims court, that if they wrongfully denied us to begin with, then they should be held accountable for our lives up until they assume the responsibility. It's just a big pushing around system out there. I believe that every system that you go to, almost all, they would love to push you to the one next door. They offer services and that, but there's red tape and there's all kinds of services for youth and over 65 and disabled. And if we were in an institution and if we're about to commit suicide, they would have helped us. But because we're just healthy, normal people, they actually told us one time, is it summertime? Why don't you go camping? That was what social services suggested to us for living. And one of the churches that feeds us, we're not going to mention it for slander reasons, but they said, oh, why don't you go to Annapolis Valley? There's lots of jobs there. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to get us away because they didn't want to help us. So finally, we've in the last couple of weeks, we've been able to, you know, shower on a regular basis. We can put all our stuff elsewhere than in the trunk of a car, which, by the way, broke and got impounded because we were living in it. 2,000 excess pounds of weight being driven around. The car was like, it was driving around with like a low rider, but the front was up in the air because all the weight. So we've lost a lot. We've been to pawn shops to get rid of things of value. We've kept receipts. We're amazing at keeping receipts and documenting events. So pretty much everything of value got returned back to Walmart and Canadian Tire. Anything that was still packageable and returnable. So we've really gone downhill a great deal. But yet, we found HCAP. They were able to help us up to this point. They did our RT hearing. They've done support with us. They've given us information as to where we can utilize the city that they've already grown accustomed to. So we're able to take care of ourselves with some of the things. But by no means is it a standard way of life. It's unfortunate that anybody should have to live the way I've seen people living here in Halifax, and I've seen all of Canada. Poverty is everywhere. But Halifax has got a lot of poverty in the ratio proportion of how many people live in this city and the age of the city. It should be bigger than Toronto, yet it's smaller than little towns somewhere.
I ran into a lot of brick walls. For example, with social services, you cannot apply for social services if you don't have an address, which left us, you know, our address was anywhere we parked our car. Like Ari said, they just pretty much send you from one organization to another. The police, you know, they sent us to the tribunal. Tribunal sent us to the police. It's just really a big, vicious circle. We felt really let down by the decision of the tribunal. On our first hearing, they basically sided with the landlord, thinking, you know, saying that it's okay, you can change your lock, your tenants have no rights. And so, you know, really disappointed with the lack of support here for, you know, this that type of situation.
What our goal is when we get to our small claims court, which is on Monday, that's when we're going to have our real legal say with what's going on, because rental tribunal is a very Mickey Mouse court with no backing, because obviously that big book of text that says Landlord Tenancy Act, it's just a bunch of fancy words that are useless, because the police can't enforce any of the rules. Therefore, anyone in this room, if you don't own your home, you should actually go home and change the locks right now, because you can't be penalized for it, and you will not be thrown out if you are the only one to have a key to the house. So if the landlord's got a key, you could end up like me and Stacy right now. We could be changing the locks on you this very moment. Nothing you can do. And some 75 days later, you'll get your time in court. So I hope you have enough money to survive for 75 days in the street. I'll be quick about it, but he started off by having a filthy house outside of where we could see when we first looked at it. The room beside ours was mold-ridden, and as we were living there, it started creeping through the door. The black would shine through. He washed the door the day we were viewing, but it's quite apparent it's mold and mildew. The whole house has fallen apart. We made a few comments about that. He didn't do anything. Now, the motorcycles that were parked in front of my door, they weren't there when we viewed the house. Now, a motorcycle is a fair-sized bike, but if you're walking through a four-foot area, the motorcycle takes up 90% of that space. So you'd actually have to go like this to get past the handlebar to go in my room. Full-size motorcycle, gas tank removed, engine apart. It smelled like a mechanic's locker or a mechanic shop. And he would actually weld. That's a bad term. He was heating up parts with a torch right in front of our room. So it smelled terrible, and it's a fire hazard. So when we made these complaints to the rental tribunal, initially he was in fear of what was going to happen because we got a videotape of it. I walked around with my camcorder and videotaped the whole house. And that's going to go into small claims court on Monday too, because we still haven't had our say with that. He was terrified that we were going to get him in big trouble. So at his first chance, $12 Canadian Tire lock, and we were gone. So we get our say on Monday, but that's why he threw us out, because he knew that we had him in a pinch. And it's very complicated to fill up those forms if you're not aware of what the to-dos and not-to-dos are, because it is absolutely essential that certain things be put on there, and you have to serve things in an exact fashion, and you can't have any hearsay. If you want something to be said there, you got to bring that person there physically. Even an affidavit, I find that somebody could write down, I so-and-so said this on this day. They won't even take that into context unless your opposing party, the person you're battling, agrees. And why would they agree for you to add ammunition, right? So they act very professional, but yet very unprofessional at the end. There's got to be no, if lawyers have no heart, the people that run these tribunal hearings, the rental tribunal, the rental tenancies, they absolutely have no heart, let alone a brain.
Were you able to get all your stuff back?
Not all, no.
Still,
no. There's a lot of stuff that was missing, and we were told on application day to write down what's in the apartment, and I looked at the clock, it was 3:45. I have to write down every belonging that's in my apartment in 15 minutes, so I just quickly jotted down the biggest things I could remember, and actually missing thousands of dollars of equipment, that guitar equipment. The stuff that was missing on the sheet I recovered it, so I said, oh, by the way, I didn't write the guitar, but here, we'll add it in. But the things that were even on the sheet were missing, and he was present, there's police present, they were watching what was going through, but nobody wanted to do a checklist and confirm nor deny what was going in or out. So basically you have to take everything, because whatever you leave there, there's no proving that it's there, no proving that it's yours, and it's if you leave it there, it's at your own risk. And we have lost probably, I don't know, a good maybe $750 to $1,000 in items that he claims aren't there.
And that was just some of the personal stories presented at a housing info session at One World Cafe on Agricola on Tuesday, all part of an effort from the Halifax Coalition Against Poverty as they try to protest and resist against the discrepancies or deficiencies in the housing situation in Canada.